Colossians chapter 3 is where we'll be this morning. Also appreciate the words of encouragement from Brother Johnston and the nice things that are said and the prayers that were offered for me by Brother Curry, and hope those things help. And I feel certain the prayer will, and hope that you'll overlook any problems I might have as a speaker this morning, and hopefully there won't be any problems with the Word. And where you do hear some problems with the Word, I want you to know it's my intention to speak only where the Bible speaks. And so if you see any problems, please let me know. Let's study about it. I want to be right with God, and I want to say the right thing from the pulpit, and I'll make amends if I need to. The sermon this morning is called Why Marriages Fail. If you're in a marriage now, I hope that this will encourage and help you in your marriage. If you're yet to be married, it's my hope that this will prepare you and in looking for the right things that you need to look for in your marriage. And if you've been through a successful marriage, I encourage you to add your own things to this and to tell us as well. I wanted to come up with three reasons to make a nice three-point sermon as to why marriages fail. I wasn't going to try for a comprehensive lesson, just a good old three-pointer. And yet, as I was looking at these things, I actually discovered that there's really only one reason why marriages fail, and that is sin. All of the reasons that you can look at that the world points to, all the reasons that you can find in the Scripture, all the reasons you can think of about every marriage that you've known that's fallen apart, they've all been because someone, somewhere involved in the relationship, sinned. Now, obviously, we can think of a couple of big sins that would end a marriage, but there are also many what we might think of as little sins that we can look at as well, and I believe a lot of those are outlined for us in Colossians chapter 3. You might think, well, that's just too simplistic, that's just too simple an answer. Sin, it's just too generic. But I think if you'll look with me, you're going to find, and if you think honestly about it, and I'm not going to be comprehensive this morning, we're not going to go over every sin that could end a marriage. We're just going to look at the ones listed here in Colossians 3. But I think if you think about it, all of them, the root cause is some sort of sin that's caused in someone's life that ought not to be there. And I think you'll find that if you can be a better Christian, you can have a better marriage. You can be a better husband, a better wife, if you're a better Christian. Colossians chapter 3, verse 1. If then you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, not on things of the earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with Him in glory. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is on account of these things that the wrath of God will come. And in them you also once walked, when you were living in them. But now you also put them all aside, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices, and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a new knowledge, to a true knowledge, rather, according to the image of the one who created him. And so the first sin that we look at that can end our marriage from Colossians chapter 3 is in verse 5. And it's a series of things that I think are closely related, so I listed them together. Immorality, impurity, passion, and evil desire, he says in Colossians 3, verse 5. There's simply not enough words to describe how destructive these kinds of sins can be to a marriage. Immorality may be the one that you think of the first. It's the most obvious. It's the scriptural reason for ending a marriage. It's going outside the marriage to find sexual gratification. And of course, we know how destructive that can be to a marriage and how God looks on it as destructive to a marriage. But impurity, passion, and evil desire are a little more generic. They're a little more broad-based and include a lot more sins. These are mostly sins of thoughts, leading to actions that may actually seem harmless at the time, and at first don't really cause a problem. But the real problem with these sins is that they almost always lead to more destructive actions that can be devastating to any relationship, and particularly to our marriages. It would be easy to spend time on this first point, but as I said at the beginning, I'd like to talk about some less obvious sins. Also in Colossians 3:5, it says evil desire and greed. I put evil desire here again along with greed because it could refer to the sexual desire that's already been mentioned, or it could refer to any desire that is not godly. A covetousness, a wanting of something is the idea here. Let's look in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Appreciate you turning and looking with me. We won't be doing a whole lot of turning this morning and flipping through, but we'll be doing some to establish our points. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6. But godliness is actually a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we have brought nothing into this world, so we can take nothing out of it. And if we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. And those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. And some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pang. Greed or covetousness is a sin that can cause all kinds of destruction. Not wanting only what you need creates and or exacerbates financial woes within your family. Studies show financial woes as a leading cause of separation and divorce. The simple fact is we won't fight over money if money is not the goal of our lives. But if it is, if it's the thing that drives us, we will fight over it. We will be anxious for it. And when we want material things, we need money to get them. So you might think, well, money's not that important to me, but something is. And it takes money to get that something. And that something can drive a wedge between you and your spouse because you're more concerned about that than anything else. That's what Jesus warns us about in Matthew chapter 6, is not being concerned about those things, but rather being concerned about the kingdom of heaven. And here in 1 Timothy 6, verse 11, Paul says, "Flee from these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness." A right mind with right priorities is the key to avoiding these sins that can destroy a marriage slowly and silently. Oftentimes, this is the kind of thing we never see coming. If we saw it coming, we would be able to avoid it. We would be able to put a stop to it. But because it creeps in slowly over time, like the frog analogy that's been used several times here, the water just keeps eating up. And those are the kinds of things that can happen in our marriage. Let's turn back with me to Colossians chapter 3 again. Colossians chapter 3, we've been considering that these points here that are on the board now are from verse 5. Consider the members of your earthly body as dead to these things, he says, to immorality, to impurity, to passion, to evil desire, and greed. He says these things amount to idolatry. Sometimes we ignore the Bible commandments about idolatry because we think idolatry doesn't exist anymore. But what has the Apostle Paul just told us? These things are idolatry. These things are the same root problem that the people in the first century had in worshiping figures made of wood or made of gold. This is the same problem. When we worship money, when we worship our bodies and the desires of our bodies, those things amount to idolatry. And at verse 6, a grave warning is given to us about these things. He says it is on account of these things that the wrath of God will come. These things are making God angry. Too oftentimes we ignore the fact that there is a wrath of God to come. We don't want to think about it because it means there's going to be punishment for our actions. Verse 7, and in them you also once walked, but you were living in them. If he says that in them you once walked, there must be a walk then that they're living now, where they put those things aside and they no longer walk in those things. And that's a hope for us, And that's what he says in verse 1. If you've been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. That's the idea that he's giving us here, is that this new walk can be a walk where we put those things away. And so in verse 8, he says, but now also put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. How many times can all of those things end a marriage? Each one of those things could be a sermon in and of itself to talk about the damages that it can do to our relationships. When we are angry, we often lose our reason and our sense. We say things we would never say if we were not angry. And we often choose to say the things we know that will hurt the most, don't we? We pick and choose. We know what will hurt. They may not be true. They may have never have been intended. But we say them because we know they'll hurt. This is never healthy for any relationship. And the slights that we inflict on our spouse are often not easily forgotten. Instead of slights and anger, we need to take the opportunity to build each other up with compliments in happy times. Instead of waiting to say something to one another when you're angry, say something when you're not angry. Say something that's good. Say something that's positive about one another. Smile at one another. Love one another. Take the opportunity to build each other up. This creates a generally positive feeling toward your spouse that can often soften any negative feelings you might be tempted to feel when you're angry. You know, when you keep the positives in your mind about a person that you're dealing with, not just your spouse, but anybody, then when you become angry with them, those positives are the prevalent thing. I've often said to people that I've had to deal with when they're dealing with one another in their relationships that a person is who they are, the totality of your knowing them, not who they were the last time you talked to them, not who they were the last thoughts you had about them. And you need to remember everything that you remember about them. You fell in love with that person, or you're going to fall in love with them for a reason. What was the reason? Cling to it. Find it. Because once you've made a commitment to your spouse, you've made a promise. You've made a vow before God. And so before you get angry, you need to remember the things that make you happy about your spouse. I remember how Bud Milam used to praise Virginia all the time. And if you didn't know the Milams, I remember it here for many, many, many years and dear friends of mine, but he always said wonderful things about her, glowing praise about her. I imagine he got angry with her sometimes, but I think those positive things were in his mind much, much more often. And what a healthy example for us. It reminds me of Proverbs 31. You probably know Proverbs 31, especially if you're married to a good woman that you love. You've probably thought about it before. Proverbs 31. If you aren't married yet, young men, this is the woman you need to look for. This is the attitude you need to have about the woman you're going to marry. Young ladies, if you're not married, this is the attitude your husband should have towards you. And this is the man you should look for. In Proverbs 31, verse 28, look what it says about this woman. Her children rise up. This is Proverbs 31, 28. Her children rise up and bless her. Her husband also, and he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. I think it's especially important amongst a relationship. You notice the works praising her in the gates part. There's a public element to this as well. Your spouse needs to know how much you love them, how much you admire them, and everyone else needs to know it too. That's the way I knew it, of the way Bud felt about Virginia, because he told me, and because he told anyone that would listen when she was around. What a great person she was. Anger can be devastating when it's not controlled, but there is a way to control it. There is a way where it can exist, and you can still control yourself. Look in Ephesians chapter 4. Look with me, if you will, in Ephesians chapter 4. We're given a commandment here from God. not a suggestion, not a it would be better if, but a commandment about anger. And I'm focusing on anger because I think wrath and malice and slander and abusive speech, those are all things that result from the primary focus of being angry and not controlling yourself. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26. Be angry and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. And do not give the devil an opportunity. Being angry gives the devil opportunity. The devil doesn't need your help. He's got plenty of weapons on his side. We don't need to give him opportunity. And yet it is impossible, yes, yet it is possible, let me say that correctly, and in fact commanded by God to be angry and yet not sin. And so we need to look for that opportunity. I think the best option is the biblical patterns that we see and how to deal with when we are angry. Now, I don't believe marriage is the intended application in these passages, and I don't think anger is necessarily what's causing these situations. These are talking about sin, but I think they're a good example to show us how we ought to deal with our relationships, and I believe them to be an effective tool against anger that you might have. Turn with me to Matthew chapter 18, and let's start there. We know in Matthew chapter 18 that Peter and the apostles want to know from Christ, how often should we forgive? And Christ, he says, should we forgive up to 7 times? And Christ says, I do not say up to you up to 7 times, but up to 70 times 7. That's in verses 21 and 22. But that started because of the attitude that Jesus puts forward in the previous verses. In verse 15, Jesus says, if a brother sins, and I know we're not talking necessarily about a sin that might have made you angry. We're talking about a personal slight in this morning. But that's not what this verse is meaning. But I still believe this is an application that can be made here. I believe this method is an effective method for dealing with it. If your brother sins, go and reprove him in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. If he does not listen to you, take one or two more with you, so that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every fact may be confirmed. And if he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and as a tax gatherer. Now I realize that this is an element that we talk about, and very rightly so, that the first application of this is in church discipline. And I believe that to be the case. But look at the example here that Jesus gives us. When someone hurts you, go to them and talk about it. Go to them and reason with them. And if they won't listen to you, get some other people so that the presence of other people will be able to confirm every word, but also to calm everything down. They're a little less likely to act belligerent when other people are around because it's embarrassing. They're a little more likely to be calm and to pay attention. And maybe you are too. I don't know how the third step of this relates to your marriage, if at all. But unless sin is directly involved, of course, and then I know it definitely relates to your marriage, this is still the process you need to go through if the anger is caused by sin. But even in the case where it's just anger over not taking the trash out, it's something that needs to be talked about, that needs to be gone to. And also look at the example that Jesus gives us in Matthew chapter 5. In Matthew chapter 5, now, here is an example where Jesus, I believe, is talking about anger that's not necessarily caused by sin, but sin is the result of the anger because of the reaction the person has. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 21. You have heard the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you, that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever shall say, you fool, shall be guilty enough to enter into the fiery hell. If therefore you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. You see how this idea relates to not only the idea from Matthew 18, but the idea also in Ephesians chapter 4. Don't wait. It's not going to get better. It's not going to feel better in the morning. Don't let the sun go down your wrath. Don't let the time pass. Certainly, let enough time pass that you cool off, that you're not going to say the things that you know would be hurtful. But once that's happened, you need to come together. And in a relationship, in a marriage, you really ought to be meeting each other. You ought to be stumbling over each other to get to each other to talk about these things and to work these things out. Because Jesus says you're going to be found guilty for the hatred in your heart. And so someone that's going to say you fool against somebody is going to be punishable by the fiery by fiery hell, he says. So we need to be careful about those things. And we need to be sure that the pattern fits where we go and seek out the other person that's made us angry. Even to the point where, he says, if you're going to present an offering at the altar, this is under the Old Testament where they're going to present their sacrifice, stop. If there you remember that there's some problem, stop. Don't even sacrifice. But instead, go and be reconciled to your brother. In this case, I would say your spouse. Talk about it. Don't bottle your anger. As I said, be sure you calm down a little bit, but come back to the problem as quickly as you can and reasonably and calmly work to resolve it. Don't let the sun go down your wrath. That's not just a good idea. It's a command from God. That's what he says in Ephesians chapter 4. Do not let it happen. Make sure that you take care of your anger. Because in taking care of your anger, you can eliminate the wrath that causes you to lash out, the malice that builds in your heart, that chills your heart toward the other. You can eliminate the slander that causes you to say evil things about your spouse. You know, oftentimes we don't say it to our spouse, do we? We say it on the phone to somebody else. We say it in the workplace. We say it at school. When we're talking about someone and we're always running them down. We're always running down our spouse. And that's a bad situation to be in. We need to follow the example like Bud showed us, where we're always saying something good. And that's going to change our attitude toward our spouse, so that when we do have anger, these other things don't happen. We need to follow the biblical example of going to them and talking to them and reasoning through things and understanding the way each other feel. You might not even reach a resolution, but at least there'll be an understanding of the feelings that are going on. Back to Colossians chapter 3, if you would. We're making good time as we're coming into our last point here in Colossians chapter 3. Verse 9. Do not lie to each other, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practice and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. Untruthfulness is perhaps the most damaging to any relationship, but especially a marriage. Of course, there are very painful lies that we tell intentionally to deceive our spouses that ultimately lead to distrust and bitterness. Maybe we're hiding a secret sin from our spouse that we're ashamed of or that we know that would be disapproving, and we're trying to keep that from them. It'll come out. And when it does come out, there's a huge amount of trust that will be lost between you and your spouse. Maybe it's as simple as saying something like we're working late when in fact we're hanging out with our friends. Because we know she doesn't want us to hang out with her friends and we don't want to be hassled about it. So we just tell her we've got to work late. Or tell him. I'm just sort of bagging on the guys in that case. Now, not only is it going to ultimately hurt your marriage, but it's a sin that separated you from God because you've become a liar. And I think that a lot of times we can look at those big things and we can say, yeah, that's obvious. You shouldn't do that. Oops, quick lying up there. That's obvious. You shouldn't do those things. But look at the context he's talking about in verse 8. Put aside anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another. I think a lot of times putting that anger aside is doing what we talked about. It's talking to one another. It's being open with one another. And I think a lot of times there are these little lies that we tell. When we answer questions like, does this make me look fat? Or, was my sermon any good this morning? We want to do little things that we won't hurt our spouse. And I'm not saying that these things are necessarily going to end your marriage, or that maybe saying everything you feel is a good idea. Sometimes there are things you think and feel that you don't have to offer. That's fine. That's not lying. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about those things that you actively pursue deception, even if it's in your mind to create a good situation. If you prefer chicken but eat steak to make him or her happy, don't pretend it's the steak that you preferred. Let them know, I'd rather have chicken, but I'm eating steak because you like it, and that's fine. That happens a lot in my house. Not as often as she would like, I'm sure. Such small lies we often call white lies, and yet these add up over time to create an unhealthy relationship in our marriage, an unhealthy situation where your spouse is irritating you all the time and she doesn't even know it, or he doesn't even know it. And when these things build up and build up over time, they eventually spill out in a rage that your spouse will not see coming and cannot possibly understand. Worse, when those things happen, you may not even remember all the stuff that's irritated you to begin with. And the one thing you do remember seems so ridiculous. You know, you're turning your socks inside out when you take them off, and I have to turn them right side out to wash them, and it's disgusting. And I'm blowing up and yelling at you for it, and it sucks. And it seems so ridiculous, but it's not the socks, it's the chips you didn't put away, it's the bread you didn't roll up, it's the whatever. It's all of these little things that you don't talk about all the time. And again, I'm not saying you need to say everything you feel, but there are little moments that you need to talk about and say, you know, that really bothers me. And if you're a good-hearted spouse, you say, I'm sorry, I'll try to do better about it. And those things don't build up. Those things don't happen. Is that lying? Maybe, maybe not. Sometimes it can be, if they say, does it bother you, and you say no, then you're lying. But I think it's a smaller irritation that builds that can really be a problem. It's less obvious sometimes. And it really causes these situations of anger, wrath, and malice within your relationship. Sometimes these things seem to be ridiculous to us even at the time. And yet we need to remember that we feel what we feel, and we need to be honest with one another concerning these things so that we can talk about it. And those that are receiving complaint need to be considerate of the complaint and need to understand that we want to do everything we can. The root cause here is selfishness. And that's really what comes into play in all of these things. It's wanting what I want and wanting them the way I want them. And that's never a good attitude to have in your relationship. Well, there are many other things that we could talk about in your marriage, but our time fails us now. There are many other dangers that we could look at. But I believe when you look at those things, you're going to find a common thread running through all of them. And the common thread is sin. The common thread is the idea that you could have avoided by studying the Bible, by being a better Christian.